And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us on this Monday. Hey, we're almost through the month of January already, and it doesn't feel like it outside. Temperatures in the mid-30s, and we'll tick it up a few more degrees today, but even warmer weather on tap for tomorrow. In fact, I think we'll be near record highs tomorrow. Unbelievable. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki alongside our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and compared with last week, this week is a total turnaround.
Well, we usually get a bit of a warm-up in January.
We always get our little January thaw, and this will be it this week.
Yeah, and it's okay. We're going to go back down into the cooler temperatures next week. Mm-hmm. I believe you've said we have some weather coming in for the weekend.
We do have a little bit coming in. There's a couple question marks on the storm system coming in here late weekend, but regardless of how much snow we get, we're going to get a lot of wind with it Sunday into Monday. So if you have any travel plans in our area Sunday into Monday, it doesn't take a lot of snow to whip that around and reduce visibility. So keep up to date on the forecast for late in the weekend and into early next week. But until then, I'll tell you what, it's not looking too bad with temperatures this week. All above normal. We're going to top out in the mid-upper 30s today. Still breezy. Northwest winds 15 to 30. And then tonight, we'll have partly cloudy skies. Winds will turn to the south at about 10 to 20 and lows in the low 20s. Up to 40 tomorrow. And the record tomorrow is 44, which ironically was just set last year.
Right. Yes. It's been very recent.
Yeah. And it will be windy tomorrow. Winds will turn to the northwest at about 20 to 30 and gusty. Briefly cooler on Wednesday, upper 20s, back into the mid-30s Thursday. And then as we head towards the end of the week, we're in the 20s, which is still above normal. Normal highs this time of the year are in the upper teens. And then the weekend will be in the 20s to low 30s with that chance for snow coming in Saturday night into Sunday. Right now, it looks like a minor event, 1 to 3 inches. But again, you know, if we get 2 to 3 inches and 30 to 40 mile an hour winds on Sunday, that could pose a problem on Sunday. So we'll keep you updated as we head throughout the week. Right now, it doesn't look like a big deal. And then maybe a couple of weak systems then next week as well. But other than that, I don't see any huge storms on the horizon. But if we can add a couple inches here, a couple inches there over the next couple of weeks, this will make our snowmobilers a little happier.
Well, right now, I think, you know, there were folks that were up north this week or this weekend. They were up around the Langdon area and so forth. I think they have a little more snow cover. So folks are just having to go a little further for rides. Yeah. But overall, if we're going to be 44 tomorrow, this snowpack's going to go.
A lot of it. Yeah.
Going to go fast.
Yeah, a lot of this is going to melt away, no doubt about it.
And, you know, this is probably the first year. No, I take that back. Out of the roughly 30-ish years I've been going to Minot for the Minot Ag Show this last week of January. This week will be only the second time that I remember it being in the 20s. It's always really, really cold. Yeah. There's years where you're fighting a headwind out to the west and you're having to wear a coat in the vehicle. Otherwise, you'd probably already freeze on the way. It just usually gets nuts.
Right. And I've had a few ask me, hey, are we going to be, what are we looking like for the upcoming spring? And I'll be down in Lisbon Wednesday. No. Yeah.
Wednesday? I'll look. I believe. Yeah. Okay. Wednesday.
Yeah. Yep. I'll be down there and we're going to be talking about the LRC and what the upcoming spring and summer will hold in terms of moisture. I know that's very important and we'll be talking about that. And what the upcoming spring in that looks like.
Well, so last week I was in Sioux Falls for the ag show down there, and I did walk past a group of farmers that were visiting, and they said, boy, it'd be nice to get a little moisture before the spring. But they didn't necessarily care if it was snow. They were hoping for some rainfall in April.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because if you get rain now, I know there's a big rainstorm that's going to be going through the central and mainly southern plains, and luckily they haven't, outside of recently, haven't had a lot of extremely cold weather. So the ground temperature is down to our south isn't quite frozen, or if it is, it's lightly frozen, where if they do get a lot of rain, that will soak in instead of running off.
Well, this will be an interesting topic of discussion with tomorrow's guest, unless he gets preempted with some things that are taking place at home. But we will be talking with Scott Matthews. He's from Northern Arkansas. And when Scott and I talked on the phone last week, all he could say in his very this is not a good Arkansas accent, by the way, but Scott basically just said, how do y'all do it? It's so cold down here. And his description of it was a bit more colorful.
I'm sure it was.
Things that I cannot say on air. Yes. So all of this weather update, though, is brought to you by Ryan Bonesack with Equitable AgriFinance, providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. He wants to work with you as a local farmer or rancher, so do give Ryan a call at 701-261-6522. And if you missed that number and you want to talk to Ryan, you can always drop an email ag@flagfamily.com or weather@flagfamily.com, and we will share those with you as we watch our inboxes for your emails. So, in fact, I had a listener question this earlier today that I'll have to answer again tomorrow on our morning shows. But is there any place in the U.S. or Canada where a stray cow roaming onto a neighboring ranch and delivering her calf, that the calf becomes property of the rancher in whose pasture the calf was born? So this is almost like if you are traveling outside the United States and where it is your child born. So is that calf still the property of the ranch from where the cow came from? And yes, your cow and the calf still go to the originating rancher.
Okay.
Because we use ear tags, RFID tags, or brands. You know where that cow originated from for the most part and can find it. Now, cattle rustling is still alive and well, and we know that that can happen. But neighbor to neighbor, you generally know where she wandered in from and had her calf, and then you would return them to your neighbors. In the summer months, when a bull jumps a fence, we always used to make fun of this, that if the neighbor's bull was in the pasture with our cows, did we give calf support if that bull inseminated any of our cows?
Wow.
That's a discussion between neighbors. Uh-huh. Y'all take care of it yourselves.
So. Cattle rustling's still going on, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Out west?
No, anywhere.
Really?
So,
wow.
The Stockmen's Associations, both North Dakota and then South Dakota Cattlemen's, in their magazines, you can run a list of how many heads you have missing, your contact information, the brand, where they were last seen. Because we do have some areas that are very remote pastures. Not everybody has an RFID tag on there, so that you can follow where that cow goes. By the way, if your cow is suddenly doing 65 miles an hour, they don't fly. So that means they're in somebody's truck
and
trailer.
That's just pigs that fly.
Yeah, it's just pigs that fly. So they're in a truck and trailer going down a highway and maybe not supposed to be. So yes, we do still have that happening. When I was at the South Dakota Cattlemen's meeting in December, there was a gentleman from Mobridge who talked about 30 head he had missing. At today's prices on beef cattle, that is a significant investment that has wandered away.
Now, would these be other ranchers doing this, or are these people outside of the ag industry and then selling them off?
There's a lot of things. First of all, you have to be equipped. You can't just put them on a leash and walk them away. And 30 heads, a lot of walking. But also, you have to consider that you look at, do you have the facilities to load them? Because if they've been on pasture for a while, they're not going to be, you don't just open a trailer door and they hop, skip, and jump inside. So do you have facilities to load them? Do you have a place to move them to? Do you have pasture to put them on? Or do you have a sale barn relationship where you can sell them? So can it be other ranchers who accidentally take your cattle? That's happened if they're not well marked. They may have wound up in a large herd and took off somewhere. But generally speaking, if you have a large amount missing, someone has probably taken them on purpose and have moved them to a feedlot or a finishing yard or somewhere else that they want to finish them out under their name and then sell them for profit.
Wow.
And there are times where one animal might just disappear and he wanders into a freezer somewhere and stays for the winter and becomes a great brisket.
Oh, jeez.
So those things can happen.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So wrestling, still alive and well. It is, some days it is the Wild West.
You're right.
So we do have a guest joining us today, and that'll be Brent Lilty. Brent is with TerraClear. And I know you said, what is TerraClear on the break?
Right.
So for those in the region who grew up picking rocks, we were told by our parents and grandparents it was a character building exercise. Walking along next to, the old timers will tell you about a stone boat that you would throw them into. For some of us, it was just tossing them into a wagon or into a loader bucket on a tractor, and you needed to get rocks out of the way. This is a far more improved mechanized, GPS involving drones type of way to remove rocks from a field. And so for those of us who did the backbreaking labor, you will indeed find this quite interesting when we talk to Brent.
The backbreaking labor is probably cheaper.
Parents liked it because A, you were cheaper. B, you were lower to the ground than them. So you could just pick them and toss them.
That's a good point.
And I did have somebody comment this morning, you know, that was often punishment from the local high school juvenile delinquents were sent out to have to help pick rock, whether it was, you know, in your dad's fields or
that's
wherever.
That's a great idea.
So we will see what that looks like and has changed to now. Again, we'll be joined by Brent in just a few minutes. So stay tuned. We'll be back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Never know what you might be doing. Thinking about your seed order for the summer, might be cleaning out the chicken coop on a nice warm day. And above all, might be thinking about picking rocks, because we do still have those in some places. And our guest today is Brent Little. He is with TerraClear. And TerraClear is going to make one of those tasks I had as a kid a lot easier. Brent, how are you?
Good. I'm doing well. How are you today?
Fabulous. So I was explaining, Dean looked at me a little bit funny earlier when I said, we had to go pick rock.
Like, well, that was for a different reason. But
That's true. And I did have somebody else ask me on an earlier show this morning as well, why did it matter? Why do we have to go pick rock? I have my reasons for it. Would you care to explain from another farmer perspective why that is?
From growing up on a farm, it's to prevent equipment damage is probably the main reason that we go through. And then there is a certain amount of pride associated with picking up rock in the ag community as well.
Well, there is. Equipment breakdowns, those were part of it, because sometimes you have rocks big enough that did damage, whether it was through a combine, a planter, so forth. You also had it where some of the land that we farm here in North Dakota is just literally littered with them, and it was actually hard to plant a crop when you had so many rocks out there. So you're picking the right place to work, Brent.
So I'm down in Iowa, and you guys are really blessed with a lot of rocks compared to us. And I definitely would agree with that in North Dakota, that you have places where it would be very difficult to drag a drill or a planter through without hitting any rocks or doing any equipment damage.
Absolutely. And I did have some guys tell me that they thought even as they picked all that rock growing up, it would just continue to pop up out of the ground. So they figured it was just, instead of raising a crop, you were raising rock.
Right. Pretty much.
It kind of did. It felt that way. So let's talk about what TerraClear does, because rather than sending your kids out there to pick rock and throw them in a stone boat or a loader bucket to haul away, what does this do instead?
So the way TerraClear really started was our founder comes from a farm. He also comes from software technology. And he started TerraClear with the mission of bringing technology to picking rock. What we do is we will fly a drone over your fields and map the field using artificial intelligence. And then a map goes to your smartphone or tablet, and you can use that map to go out and pick the rocks yourself. Or we'll come out and pick them for the farmer with our TC100 attachment on the front of a skid loader.
Okay, so let's start at the top here when you think about it. When you're flying the drone, can anybody use the drone? Does it have to be your drone in conjunction with your proprietary software? What does that look like?
So today, it has to be a very high resolution imagery drone. They're enterprise level drones is what they call them on the market. It's a very high resolution camera. You're talking 5 millimeters per pixel on the soil surface, is the resolution that we're getting.
Okay. So now we've flown the drone. We can see all the rocks. I've watched you do this in a demo. We're literally dropping pins where each rock would be. And what size are we talking about? Are we talking about my iPhone size? Are we talking about the big as my head size? The, oh, good Lord, I need a backhoe size? What are we talking about here?
Well, so we'll map anything 7 inches and above. The AI is trained to see today. Obviously, it's the easiest for the AI to pick out of all the imagery is about the size of your open hand is how I try to equate it.
Okay. So I'm looking at about this size. Mm-hmm. All right. Yep. And so we've mapped them. And is this a, is it almost like a franchise that you have people who can run this software? Is it specifically coming from you as TerraClear? You're coming to my field to do this work.
So the image processing today is all run through our proprietary software. We are, though, looking for local service providers where we basically let them go sell the product. We will come and map it, or they can map it themselves. If they have the correct drone equipment, we'll process the imagery, we'll send them the map, and then they can go out and service the fields that they sell.
And, go ahead.
And Brent, did you say earlier, if you did, I missed it, do you service in terms of, so you'll map it out and let them know exactly where the rocks are. Do you have service to go out and pick that up as well, you said, or no, that's just...
Yes.
You do?
Yep,
okay.
Yep, we do have... Okay. We have local service providers. Right now, we have one in Bismarck. There's a few in western Minnesota as well, covering the area, but we're always looking for to add more. Obviously, picking rock is labor-intensive, especially sure. up in the Dakotas. so we're always looking for more to use or to get in on the attachment and service our customers.
Just found you a part-time job, Dean.
Well, I've got an idea, and maybe this is something they might be working on down the road. Have you ever thought of maybe drones big enough where, get a nice little claw on it, and so it dips down, picks
so
up the rocks. So
the
drone takes it.
Okay, there's something there about payload.
True. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
You'd have to have something on the ground in conjunction with it. That's,
Yep. Yep. The other thing we are working on, though, our team is working on, and this is not really ready for prime time yet, so you guys are kind of getting the inside scoop on it. We do have two Bobcat loaders. Being from the Fargo area, I assume you guys know Bobcat fairly well.
Yes, I do.
We have two Bobcat loaders that have autonomous technology that will actually go out by themselves using the map, pick up the rocks, dump it in a pile that you tell it to.
Okay, that was going to be a question I wanted to ask, is if you are able to send an autonomous skid steer out after it, and you're working with Bobcat to do that, because it's when you're driving across the field to go get rocks, it's not like driving on pavement. It's not smooth. Okay. And I can see where being able to map that, and I would venture a guess the software gives you the most efficient pattern possible to go do the pickups.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. We use what's called a traveling salesman algorithm to map out the rocks. It's basically connect the dots. What's the shortest path between all the dots on the map?
Which would be helpful at the grocery store. I just want you to know that. If I could have the shortest dots on the map, I'd appreciate that. So as we're talking about doing this, you said rocks about 7 inches, but also larger size. All right.
Yes.
What happens if, because this is real life. You get out there, you think you're just going to dig it up with the loader bucket on, your 4430, whatever. And it's bigger than you thought as you start uncovering it. And there's no way your skid steer is going to take that because you literally do need a backhoe. Does it just mark that as a fail?
So right now when we are sending our service providers out there or when the farmer is out there picking, there's functionality built into the app. If they find one that's too large for them to pick, they will actually tap on the rock on the app, and there's a dropdown that comes up. They can mark it as unable to pick. It will come up with a red circle and an X, and then they can drive right back to that with their excavator, backhoe, end loader, whatever they need.
Okay. All right. There's more questions. I'm making notes already, Brent. We've got much more to ask. So we will do that after we do our bottom of the hour news, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion with Brent. He's from TerraClear. How rock picking just got a lot easier, and I heard many of us who've done it in the past go, ugh, they should have to work as hard as we do. So we'll be right back to talk about that. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, and thanks for being here this afternoon. For those of you who grew up picking rocks, and I know I emphasize this a lot, but believe me, it was not pleasant to have to go pick rocks. It was either freezing cold in the spring or super stupid hot in a stubble field in the fall.
Well, they couldn't have been that heavy, though, could they?
Oh, it depended.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what you see above ground is just the beginning.
Well,
so.
Good point. Did you ever have to dig them up? I mean,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. Dad and Grandpa made sure you were equipped with shovels and other useful tools to the situation.
Oh,
yeah. They were not opposed to child labor. So we have with us Brent Little. I think I sent that right, Brent. I hope so.
Lytle.
Okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, Brent with TerraClear. And TerraClear, if you want to just give us a brief overview for those who might just be joining us now, Brent, TerraClear, what are you?
TerraClear offers rock mapping and rock picking services throughout the Midwest. And we utilize artificial intelligence technology to pick rocks out of farm fields.
Which is a lot easier than some of the other ways that it's been done. But, all right, we've been talking about once you have GPS, you fly the drone, you GPS, you mark where the rock are so they can go back and get them. And potentially there's the future possibility of it being autonomous to send a skid steer out there. But once you get there, what does it look like? It's not really the claw machine type of claw that's picking up the rocks, but the skid steer is there on purpose so you don't have to get out and throw the rock into the bucket.
Yes.
Okay. So explain that.
Yep. So I'm guessing, you know, many of your listeners are probably familiar with a skeleton bucket for picking rocks. And our founder's mission was essentially to create something that, you know, with a skeleton bucket, you're digging up a lot of other material. We wanted it to be as close to human hands as possible. So our engineers went to work and came up with a design. It's actually four tracks on an arm. It's been equated to a dinosaur, essentially, out there, attached to one of the skeleton buckets. And those four belts grab the rock, they pull it in, there's no dirt or there's no soil attached to them, and the rock pile comes out nice and clean. And, yeah, I mean, it's a very fast way to pick rocks.
Now, Brent, do you have a – does it depend on which time of the year, wheels or tracks on the skid steer? I mean –
We generally recommend tracked skid steers, and just the reason for that is just the roughness of the field. It's a lot more comfortable for the operator. We do have operators who have wheeled skid steers as well, but we recommend tracks just for that operator comfort.
And obviously this is done mainly in the spring and then late fall after harvest, or is there one particular time that's better than the other?
When the rocks come out of the ground.
When the rocks come out, yeah.
Right. We try to cater our services for when the farmer normally picks rocks. Now, up in your area, fall is a very popular time. I see our video. So
yeah.
the fall is a very popular time, and it works out really well because farmers have an extended season to go out there and pick. But if you guys watch The Millennial Farmer at all.
We do. Zach Johnson out of Southern Minnesota. Yep.
Yep. We were actually out in Zach's fields for the first time ever for Zach in planted corn. We have several customers who actually, you know, that's after the last pass. So that's going to get them up before the combine. They really like us out there in the planted crop. And because of the way our picker is, we really don't disturb much soil around the rock. We just grab the rock and keep going.
So one, you mentioned we can see the video right now. So if you are watching on our live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV, you can watch TerraClear's video that shows what it's like to have to walk down the field. You pick up this arm load, you're throwing them in your side by side, the back of a pickup, the rock box on your tractor, etc. But what I think folks don't always realize is just how much you can do damage, because there's a picture of someone's got a sledgehammer and they're pounding a rock out between the discs. And that's not uncommon. So I think that kind of ties into what you were going to ask, Dean, too.
Yeah, it's so how much damage, Brent, is done each year by having rocks in the field? How much damage is done to equipment?
I know, so specifically as an annual expense, I don't really have that number off the top of my head, but I do have people I work with who, you know, they said they wanted to start working with me because they ran a rock through their combine last year, and $30,000 just was the start. And there you see the picker if you're watching the live stream. And now you can equate to why it looks like a dinosaur.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, it does. Because there's the bucket and then there's the grabber, the hook, if you will, that's got to go get it. Boy.
Okay, I got an email into my inbox asking, say, forgive me for growing up in the city.
Sure.
But where do these rocks come from?
Oh.
Where they just don't appear. Where do they come from?
So they do. And here's why.
Well, so the glacier, so when our area was covered with glaciers, mm-hmm. It was kind enough to melt back and deposit those rocks. And that's the reason they're in layers, essentially, and they just continue to push up from the frost. You know, that they just continue to appear over the years as we till the soil and farm.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yep. When you are doing tillage, when there is erosion, rocks literally do just appear. They keep mm-hmm. popping up through the soil surface. Now, okay, so when you showed that picture, Brent, if you are doing that autonomously where you've got the software uploaded, the skid steer, the bobcat can go where it needs to go, does it matter where it takes the rocks? Do you just pinpoint a destination if it's a rock pile, if it's going to be a hole that they're going to get buried? I'm sure there's got to be a start and an end stop, almost like an AB line for this thing, right?
Yep. So actually our new provision of the app that came out just last week, it now accounts for field driveways. So the grower can mark the field driveways. So our start and end point to our line that we predict, to our suggested route that we predict is actually coming out of field driveways. So it's starting and ending at a field driveway is our goal. And then when we go out and do the service, you know, this will work the same way someday when autonomous technology gets there. But when we go out there and do the service today, we ask that the grower selects a location for the rock pile within our app.
Yep.
And that's all done through the TerraClear app available on the App Store or Google Play Store. And it's simple. You just hold your finger down and mark the rock pile.
So one of the things that you said was when it comes to picking rock, you could do it in planted crop. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking about that. Are you talking about short corn, probably V5, so let's say like 7 inches tall, and you can go over the row without doing damage?
Yes.
Okay.
We like to keep it under that V4, V5, just like a sprayer going through there. We don't want to, we don't want to break it off after that V5 stage.
Absolutely.
And Brent got another email question from one of our listeners asking, if I'm interested in this, what is it priced by acre? Is it priced by time? How do you set that?
As a kid who picked those rocks, right? This is priceless.
So we price our map by acre. So it starts out right now at $4.50 an acre for the map. That's a map produced to your smartphone or tablet that you can utilize with every field that we map. We actually give a customized quote, and I'm going to give a range, and somebody's probably going to hold me to it.
Make it a big
one.
Our
average range of cost per acre to go out and pick is generally between $8 and I'm going to say $25 an acre. It depends on how many rocks there are. And that includes the cost of the map, though. So that $8 to $25 an acre is not in addition to the $4.50 an acre.
But you need to put that in perspective that that's cheaper than running a rock the size of my head through a combine doing $30,000 worth of damage, because if you're not familiar with how that operation will go, you're talking about a header running on the ground, low, probably soybeans. That's mm-hmm. why we roll our soybeans, is to press rocks down into the soil surface so they don't come up into the header. Because once they come in through the feeder house and work their way through that machine, all they do is trash everything inside and just cause a huge amount of damage before it ever gets through the machine or gets spit out the back end. And it's like, it's like sending a hook through a fish. It's just going to gut everything on its way through there. It's messy.
It's a horrible noise going through the combine.
Oh, you don't want that noise. If you're in the cab and you start to hear that sort of a noise, you could just begin to cry right there. It's not pretty.
Yep.
So, and Brent, you're operating in a number of states. I'm sure there are some regions that are more rock populated than others. So is it hard to find your equipment, demonstrations, people to do business with, et cetera?
So it's getting easier. So as we go, as we expand throughout the Midwest here, we actually have two reps in North Dakota, and then a rep in northern South Dakota as well. And like I said, I'm down in Iowa. We've got reps throughout Minnesota, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, Montana now. So we've really expanded quickly in the last 6 months to a year.
Well, I can get your paperwork signed up for you, Dean, when we get back to the weather office. So this can be your new hobby.
I say a little side gig, a side hustle.
There you go.
Are you talking about selling or going out and picking?
Going out and picking.
Oh, okay.
Well, but you can do it with TerraClear. We can get you hooked up where you can use the software.
There you go.
He can sell too if he wants.
That's right.
All right.
Everybody needs something extra to do. Oh my goodness. So, all right, Brent, if we are kind of wrapping up here, but where are other places that people can find you? Where should they be going and looking? Just what haven't we talked about yet today that you want to make sure that farmers listening hear you say?
I think we've touched on pretty much everything, but the places to find us would be at terraclear.com. Or like I said, on our app, on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, you can now order fields through the app and you'll have a rep reach out to you from there. Or our phone number in the Midwest is 712-513-2809. And that will take you to essentially a dispatch that will get you in touch with the correct local rep.
Excellent. And it's not just about the equipment savings that, you know, to avoid damage, but also it can be a part of factoring in for your labor cost. If you don't have somebody to go do that and you have a problem field, this really could be a way for you to go out there and get it taken care of. So, yeah, it's a pretty neat system. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it, Brent. Really appreciate that.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
All right. Looking forward to seeing you at the next farm show where I can pepper you with questions.
Thanks,
Brent. Sounds good.
Thanks, Brent.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We want to make sure to go through weather one more time, and we have some ag headlines to follow up on.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody again for joining us. Very interesting concept. And like you said, Bridget, it's like, you didn't know you needed it until you had it. And then once you had it, once you get it, you're like, well, how'd I live without this?
So I was at Farm Progress Show in Iowa in August, and I saw their skid steer with the bucket and the hydraulic arm on it operating. And I think I walked by three times, and each time I went, what are they doing? And then you just stop and you stare at it for a while and go, well, now that's cool. Okay, yeah. Now I want to know more. And then I ran into Brent at FarmCon down in Kansas City. We had a great talk. He let me ask him a kabillion questions because I'm nothing if not nosy and wanted to know what was going on with this machine and how they're using it. It's pretty cool. And if you haven't checked it out, by all means, at the very least, go look at their YouTube video of that rock bucket in operation. That was the best thing to watch.
It is cool. Yes. Technology, boy. What I mean, that saves time, money. Oh. And
when in days like today where you don't have enough labor, I mean, there's no farm, I shouldn't say no, but there are a few farms that look at me and say, yep, I got all the labor I need. I don't need more people. You can always use somebody else. And so they're deriving a business out of literally custom rock picking. Mm-hmm. But you as yourself, as the farmer, can go ahead and buy this software or license the software and do it.
Interesting.
And that way, let's say you're in the tractor and you have that software on your phone. You see a rock during planting, you can GPS that rock and go back and get it later because that's what they were talking about doing with in-crop over the corn.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Awesome. You know what else is awesome? Well, depends which side of the coin you're on, but this is great weather. I mean, for the end of January, again, if you're a snowmobiler, cross-country skier, you like doing anything, any outdoor winter weather activities, yeah, this really isn't ideal, but we will see changes as we head into, well, late weekend and looks like the next couple of weeks. We're going to start getting into a stormier part of the LRC cycle. So that's good news there. Rest of today, we're looking at a lot of sunshine. Temperatures currently in the low to mid 30s. And that's about where we'll stay, is about the mid 30s for the rest of the afternoon. A little breezy with those northwest winds at about 15 to 30. Then tonight, we're dropping off into the 20s. And tomorrow, another beautiful mild day, if you will. It will be windy, though, tomorrow. Northwest winds 20 to 30 and gusting close to 40 at times. But highs right around 40. The record for tomorrow is 44. I think we'll be just shy of it. And then we're heading into to cooler weather, but only by a little bit on Wednesday. Still well above normal, about 30. And then back up into the mid to upper 30s on Thursday with plenty of sunshine. A little bit cooler on Friday. We'll drop it back into the 20s. And then a storm system, a potential storm system, comes our way over the weekend, mainly late Saturday night into Sunday, bringing us temperatures still above normal, but in the 20s to low 30s before colder air arrives with highs in the teens next week. Now, we're looking at the chance for snow coming in Saturday night, Sunday. It doesn't look like a big deal. Most models are anywhere between an inch to three. I think I'm leaning more towards the 1 inch mark. But if we get up to 3 inches, as we said earlier, the problem is Sunday, very windy conditions. So whatever snow we get, because a lot of this that we have on the ground is going to be melted away by the time we get to this weekend, or it's going to be crusted over and not really being able to be blown around. So whatever snow we get Saturday night into Sunday will be able to be blown around with those strong winds on Sunday. So that could be a mess for travel. But again, we're 5 days, 6 days away from this, so we'll keep an eye on it and keep you updated.
So far, so good.
So far.
Speaking of so far, so good, the Beagle Brigade has actually come to fruition. So this is under the auspice of Homeland Security. We now have 120 Beagle dogs that are going to be used at 88 different international airports throughout the United States. The dogs are sniffing for viruses, for plants that should not be brought into the U.S., as well as non-USDA inspected meat. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but this is a problem at various ports where someone goes back to visit grandma in the homeland, and when they come back, they try to bring her homemade salamis. No, you can't do that. They're not federally inspected. They can, in fact, be bringing disease with them through the ports.
Oh, I mean, even you're not planning on selling it. You just want to bring it home to
Correct,
eat it.
But even for consumption.
Really?
Yes. So there is a concern, especially because we are seeing African swine fever around the world. Currently, Germany is locking down their livestock because of the findings of foot and mouth disease within three water buffalo. The rest of that herd was destroyed. Animals have been moved. There's a quarantine area around that particular farm because foot and mouth disease is so very contagious amongst animals across farmyards. And with Europe being so closely knit with their farms, we are trying to make sure that that does not come here to the U.S. So these beagles are not only sniffing bags, but your shoes, if they can smell that there is something on your shoes that should not be brought into the U.S. because beagles have a great nose, a terrible annoying bark, which is probably one of the reasons why you have them, is so that they can alert you very quickly and you wonder what is wrong with the dog. But yes, the Beagle Brigade has now been brought to fruition.
Interesting.
Yes.
And this has become a problem. This isn't a recent problem.
There's a reason they brought the beagles in.
So this has become more of a problem recently.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Everybody wants to try to bring things that they should not. That includes all of us who go golfing somewhere and try to bring back those Cuban scars you weren't supposed to have once upon a time. Not naming names. But nonetheless, these are things that folks have to, that we're watching out for through AFIS as well as Homeland Security. Because remember, food security is national security.
Right.
We don't want that to happen.
No doubt.
Additionally, there is some concern that's going on with several organizations. One of them now is the FTC and the attorney generals in Minnesota as well as Illinois. They have taken a lawsuit to John Deere about unfair practices on repair costs for farmers. Okay, so this, I see a lot of sides in this. New tractors, new equipment has a tremendous amount of technology on it. We just talked to Brent about drones and GPSing software to pick rocks. Tractors now have, and combines have much of the same. John Deere did sign a memorandum of understanding with American Farm Bureau a year ago in order to try to help bring more information to farmers to work on their own equipment. Farmers say that's not enough, that the high cost of repairs, also the shutdown time. So your machine shuts down, you need a technician there, you can't wait 4 or 5 hours to get them there. That's just costing you in downtime. But the reason for it, John Deere will tell you, and this is this case with all equipment manufacturers, John Deere is just probably the most high profile. When you look at that equipment, even if you take the battery cables off in the wrong order, there are 10 different software processing computers on that machine. You can fry three of them. They're valued at 10 grand a piece. That is $30,000 worth of equipment loss that John Deere would have to warranty because something was done inaccurately and not by one of their technicians. So that's, I get it. There's a lot of fights to both sides of this right now, but the lawsuit was brought forward by Federal Trade Commission and then also to the folks in Minnesota and Illinois through their attorney generals. So we'll see where that goes for John Deere.
All right. Well, for Bridget and myself, we want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. Hey, Jay Thomas is finally back in the saddle. He's feeling a little better. So the Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.